I started writing the fourth book in the Hatton series in the spring of 2014. Then the summer holidays got in the way before I'd finished it, and then we moved to Estonia. And when I got there, I was inspired to write Song of the Dead. And when I was done with that, for reasons which even my biographers can't explain, I decided to write We Are Death rather than finish the Hatton novel. Then I did Ballad in Blue and something else, and time passed, and all in all, by the time I'd finished Hatton 4, it was 2 years later. I sent it to my publisher, Blasted Heath, and it was then that I'd learned they decided to throw in the towel, so they wouldn't be publishing anything anymore. Initially, the intention was for them to pass all my digital stuff on to Freight Books, and the editor there read the fourth Hatton and was keen. There was even talk of putting them into print for the first time. I went out and bought an Aston Martin in preparation. Then Freight Books collapsed in an avalanche of debt and acrimony, none of which, I should note, was to do with either me or Sergeant Hatton. Although I then published the first three Hatton books myself on Kindle and print on demand, I signed with Hodder with Westfall Series, so Hatton 4 was further delayed. I finally saw publication in the autumn of 2019. When civilization has fallen, and the final history of the world is written by the alien beings who are watching over the earth with a mix of incredulity and rueful disappointment, I doubt if Hatton 4 will get much of a mention. Hatton 4 is okay. It's an album filler. If the series was the White Album, it would be, let's say, Glass Onion or Savoy Truffle. It ain't Why Don't We Do It in the Road or Wild Honey Pie, but neither is it While My Guitar Gently Weeps or Blackbird. Here's some passages from the book, a majority of which has absolutely nothing to do with the plot whatsoever. Got something that'll be right up your street, says Ramsay. Walking into the station, 9:34, late, again. Woke up at 2:30, could feel one of those fucking birds pecking at my brain, right inside like it was there. Nearly after I don't know how long, finally got up, made a cup of tea and turned on the TV. Not much on at 4 in the morning. Watched 30 minutes of the Cubs at the Nationals. Tied game, into overtime, bottom of the 15th. The 15th. Jesus, even that didn't put me back to sleep. Went back to bed. Lay there like a lemon as the day got light, finally got back to sleep at 7 or something, just when I should have been getting up. And now I'm late and will have to deal with Taylor's eyebrow or whoever it is he's going to express his disapproval. Stop to talk to Ramsay in the front desk. Why do I think I'm going to be offended, I say. Ramsay laughs. You look shit, by the way, he says. I know, give me the thing. This guy in room 3 wants to complain about the people who live across the street. I lean in the counter, settling in for the duration of the story. Those kind are certainly my favourites, I say. Mowing his front lawn too early on a Sunday. Shagging his wife up against the window of their bedroom, says Ramsay. I take a moment to process that one. Not just the fact someone somewhere is shagging his wife up against the window or that someone who's watched it wants to complain rather than get the popcorn in, but the fact is he's saving it for me. Are you making that up? Takes all sorts. And you think it's a job for the detective sergeant? A defensive look crosses his face. I don't think I've ever in all my career played either the detective or the rank card. Don't know where that came from. Obviously not in the mood for exhibitionist sex acts. Taylor said you weren't busy and you could handle it. Did he? And just like that, I've ruined it for him. Whatever, Sergeant, he says. If you're going to be a dick about it, I'll give it to Anderson. He sits down, back in front of the computer. Sorry, Stuart, you're right. It's up my street. Bad night. Tap my head as though he's supposed to know what that means. As though I've been telling people about the fucking birds, which of course I haven't. Why would I tell anyone about the birds? Room 3, I add. I'm going. Straight there. Walk away, waving off any objections I might have, but I don't think there were going to be any anyway. He was going to have a laugh. I ruined it. Now we're moving on. We're all grown-ups. The crows are back. I don't know why. I mean, in my head. They're still outside, of course, all over. More and more of them every year. But those crows never went away. The crows in my head, though, those fuckers had gone. After all the shit a year and a half ago, my head was full of them. This cacophony of noise. Crows with their jibber-jabber. In my dreams at night and my waking nightmares in the day. I'd go and sit in the park at the top of the town just to get some air. Listen to the wind in the trees and there would always be the ugly sound of the crows. Everywhere. But then at last, not the ones in my head. A couple of months maybe and then they flew off somewhere. I don't know where they went. Just disappeared. The fucking plague. Had it one day, gone the next. The real crows, the ones in the park, sitting on the roofs, waiting for spilled kebabs after closing time on a Friday night, they were still there, but it didn't bother me anymore. I could look at a crow and think, yeah, whatever, your uncle nearly had the chance to eat my brain, but it didn't happen, so we've all moved on. Fuck you, you shiny jet black asshole. But now, last couple of weeks, they're back in my head, back in my dreams, talking to me. I think they're talking to me, but I can never remember what they say. And those crows out there, the ones in the telephone poles and sitting on walls, they're looking at me again. I can feel them. Piece of shit, carrion scum bastards. So why are they back? Jesus, how the fuck do I know? But there's something. There's one possibility. One thing standing out and crying. Me. Look at me. This is why. It's going to be that bastard Clayton. Michael Clayton. He's out there somewhere. Never went away. That's what the crows are telling me. Could we have snared the fucker if we'd gone for him after the absurd Plague of Crows crap? We got the killer and the suits upstairs were happy to assume it was a one-woman job. She was a serial killer. Serial killers don't usually have evil masterminds behind them. We'd done what was needed. We caught her and killed her red-handed. Killing stopped. They weren't about to go back to the public and say, you know that case we cracked? You know how we said you could stop living in fear? You know how we were all self-satisfyingly licking our own balls, even though cracking the case was actually nothing to do with us suits in the first place? But I've only told you half the story. There's someone else involved and they're still out there. So if you thought you were safe walking home from work tonight, think again. You're all going to die. They were never going to say it, and sure enough, they didn't. With Clayton having established his credentials as a walking lawsuit and the main piece of evidence against them being the time he pitched up at the hospital and more or less confessed to me, the suits chose to leave him alone. Perhaps they would have been more credulous in my story if I hadn't been so doped up in morphine at the time of the confession. Ultimately, I'm not sure I believe it myself. Can I even be certain he was in the hospital room at all? Nevertheless, he's back now, at least. That's what I'm assuming. But I don't think anyone higher up the food chain, starting with DCI Taylor, will take my word for it based on conversations with the crows in the middle of the night. I need more. But I'm not going looking for it, though. If the crows are speaking the truth and he's back, then the asshole will know where to find me. Maybe the morning I wake up remembering what the crows have said to me in the night will be the morning I die. That would be a relief. The complainant is sitting across the desk from me holding an iPad, an older version, one of the ones weighing 8 or 9 kilos. So far he's yet to show me anything. I'm dying for the coffee, but since I made such an ill-gracious hash of receiving the assignment from Ramsay, I kind of rushed in here, not stopping in the way. I have my notepad. I haven't written anything yet. What makes you think it's aimed specifically at you? I ask. Because no one else, no other house, I mean, looks directly onto their front window. I know what they're doing. They wait until there's no one about in the street. I know what it's like up there. Those streets can be very quiet, particularly these days when parents don't let their children outside without a bodyguard. He's in his early 60s, small round glasses resting the end of a large nose, mostly bald but with longish grey hair at the sides and back. Needs a cut, I'd say. I think he's trying to cultivate some sort of professorial look, but I've already learned he's in insurance. I elected not to go any further. Big houses up there, say, what do they do? He snorts. I doubt she's ever done anything. He was at RBS. They made him redundant and he walked away with 1.3 million. He articulates the figures like he might be getting lip read, enhanced mouth movement, lower volume combination. This guy really is a twat. Still, here now, all in. Show me the photograph, I say. There's more than one. Excellent. He turns on the tablet, tips up so I can't see him type in the passcode, which is fair enough because obviously being a police officer, I am this close from reaching over there, grabbing the thing the fuck off and never giving it back. He has to concentrate while he works out how to retrieve a photograph, then turns the tablet around, making sure to hold on to the device. See, he says. There, right enough, is a picture of a woman, her breast squashed against the window. Her face is squashed too, although the look of pleasure is still apparent. The man behind is not in shot, but for the single hand holding her stomach. A large lady in her 50s, a mass of curly hair dyed auburn. I study it, noting the high quality of the double glazing. If these were 1930s windows, that woman would be gone for the burn. Shards of shattered glass embedded in those large compressed boobs. Before looking up at him, that's some pretty graphic evidence, I say. When was it taken? Oh, that was the third time. The third. These people aren't messing around, Sergeant. And do you have photos from the first two? Pursed lips. The first time, well, to be honest, I was shocked. And I wouldn't have dreamt of taking a picture. I thought they must have just got carried away. But then, sure enough, a few days later, they did it again. Right there. Up at the window opposite where I sit and do my jigsaw puzzles. He does jigsaw puzzles. Oh, well, they could be fun or something. Meditative, that's the word, not fun. Maybe it would help me if I did jigsaw puzzles. What kind of jigsaw puzzles do you do? What? Do you know these 5,000 piece things are all usually 1,500? Anything else to do? Wait, what does that have to do with it? Are you mocking me? Not at all, Mr. Gregson, sorry. So you took the picture the third time. He looks suspicious, then says, yes. And this was in the last couple of days? Oh, no. No, this was 3 weeks ago. His eyes have widened. The other pictures, they're from other times. I have lots of pictures. How many times have they had sex in the window, Mr. Gregson? The lips tighten a little again. The way one sphincter does any time a doctor mentions the word suppository. 10. And why has it taken you so long to come to speak to us? I didn't know what to do. Mr. Hartwell and I, you know, we're in the bowling club committed together. We all know each other. I've eaten Mrs. Hartwell's buns. Keep a straight face now, Sergeant. None of your sniggering. This isn't a carry-on movie. Have you seen them socially since the window sex began? Of course. And nothing was said. So why do you think they're intentionally letting you watch them have sex? He looks back at the picture of the woman, then turns the tablet back to me. He starts slowly dragging his finger across the screen, flicking from image to image. Mrs. Hartwell pressed against the window. Mr. Hartwell sighed on his wife on her knees, fellating him. Mrs. Hartwell sitting on her husband's face. Mrs. Hartwell seemingly with her legs between her husband's armpits, her head resting on the ground as he fucks her. There's the clincher. I don't get a really good look at it, but it's the kind of position you only do for show. Can't possibly be comfortable for either of them. There are a lot of pictures. He keeps going, flicking through. It's probably up to me to stop him. Wow, you got an ejaculation shot. Nice timing. He presses the off button and brings the tablet fully back under his control, looking uncomfortable. You want me to go and speak to them? Yes. Okay, I can do that. Don't you think? They must have seen you taking the photographs, though. Right, especially if you were taking it on that thing. It's hardly discreet. Yes, of course they saw. They clearly loved it. Look at the pair of them. They're like rabbits. Perhaps they were thinking you were enjoying it. You took, good God. Have you asked them to stop? Have you, for example, drawn a curtain so you can't see them? It's summer. I don't draw the curtains until 10. All right. Why do you think they're doing it then? Clearly they want me to join in, but I'm not going to. They can't have me. Time for coffee. I push the chair back, stand up, despite the fact the woman in the photograph is so unattractive she could have played one of the dwarf women you never actually get to see in Lord of the Rings. There was a time when I could have been turned on looking at those pictures. Not anymore. Well, not at the moment. Thanks for coming in, Mr. Gregson. I'll go and see them and report back and we'll see where it's going to go. He doesn't look convinced. Perhaps if I'd said to go down there with a SWAT team. Having coffee across the road with Sergeant Harrison. She's my new go-to guy for intimate conversation. My gay best friend. She's a bit messed up and I'm a complete fuck-up, so we kind of get along. And of course, she's damn attractive, coupled with the fact I never even make the effort to try to get into bed, so it all works out. Everything at this station thinks I'm playing some sort of long game, believing I can weigh her down, make the score, and then move on. And when I say everyone, I mean Taylor. I doubt anyone else cares. All these constables these days, they're all 20 years younger than Eileen and me. When I think of the two of us sitting at a table, I see the attractive 40-something lesbian in the office stud. The constables will see two old fuckers clinging onto each other like sad middle-aged has-beens in a Woody Allen movie. So this happened, I began, as we settled down across the table, a coffee and a muffin each. My turn to download, given that yesterday she owned the conversation with a fantastic tale of a couple of hours in bed with a 19-year-old student who, when lying back naked at the end, smoking a joint, had told her that it'd been like having sex with her mum. Eileen hadn't hung around long enough to establish whether that was a simile arising from actual experience, but thinking back, she wouldn't have been surprised. Tell me you're having sex again, she says. I can't be the only complete tart left at the station. It's been 8 months. I haven't had sex since the night I spent with Phyla Stewart. It's not that after her murder I made some sort of vow of celibacy. Just haven't felt like it. Haven't gone looking for it and it hasn't happened. I spend all my time with a lesbian, I say. How's it I'm going to get laid? I managed, despite spending time with you. Well, yes, but people probably think we're both gay, which works for you because you are. No one thinks you're gay. Whatever. Can I tell you what happened, or do you not want to hear it because it's not got sex in it? She laughs, breaks off a piece of muffin. Recently had her teeth whitened. Nice job. Let's hope she doesn't get her face punched in by one of her clients. That's the kind of thing that happens after all. Sure, she says. But you know, I thought when we started hanging out, I was at least in it for some vicarious heterosex. I mean, I've given you a lot of lesbian stories. So one of these days you're going to have to start pulling your weight. Okay, I'll have sex just to keep you happy. But can I tell you the thing? Tell me the thing. Thank you. So I was up at Philo's grave the weekend, Sunday afternoon. She's nodding. She knows I'd go up there. One day she might look concerned at me and tell me I have to go over that and move on, but not yet. And her husband shows up. She lets out a low whistle. Uh-oh. First time that's happened? Yep. Did you see him coming? That, of course, cuts straight to it. If I'd seen him coming, there wouldn't have been half the trouble. You didn't see him coming and you were talking to her out loud. You're very perceptive. You should be a detective. So how did that play out? Well, break off a piece of muffin, take another mouthful of coffee. What exactly were you saying? That's the thing. It was, I think, he kind of implied what I was saying was worse because it was just general chit-chat. I mean, obviously, it would have been bad if I'd been pouring my heart out about how much I missed her and what a great life we would have had together, but I wasn't. Well, not at that particular moment. I was just having a chat. And she was talking back in my head. And were you leaving gaps for her to talk? Mm-hmm. Okay, not great. And what, were you standing over the grave, kneeling down beside it? I laughed, but not in a butt-gusting, just heard Frankie Paul use the word cunt sound of a way, just laughing at myself because I know how this is all going to sound. I was sitting in the grave, leaning back against the headstone. Jesus, hun. Drinking wine. She puts her hand to her face. There's something of the Emma Thompson concern about her when she does that. You know Emma Thompson's concerned face. She uses it in every movie, and I get to see it rather often from Eileen. Not from the bottle. Oh no, I had a glass. Two glasses. You poured Philo a glass. Yeah. Did you have a picnic? Just to buy crisps. Oh, classy. Hey, they were kettle chips. All right, quality. You weren't naked, were you? If I had been, I think that would have been in the news. Okay, right, we've established the scene. What happened? He was upset. No kidding. No idea how long he was standing and listening. I mean, cheeky bastard, it was none of his business. Then he storms up, kicks over the wine, stands over me calling me a fucking cheating, marriage-breaking cunt. Those were his words. Cheating, marriage-breaking cunt. Yeah, I mean, technically, the guy who broke up his marriage was the bastard who killed his wife. Not me. Technically. What did you do? I sat and let him rant for a while. Then I thought we were getting to the stage where he was going to kick me in the face, so I got up. What was he saying? Oh, you know, kind of things you'd expect. Who the fuck was I? How dare I? Blah, 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 blah. Called me a cunt several times. I thought I'm a fairly mild-mannered chap, but it seems I was wrong. Maybe he was provoked. I didn't react to him. I suppose that might have made it worse. He was looking for the fight. He didn't get it. But it's a fair cop. It's just about the most intimate situation in which he's ever going to find us. It's the one of you is dead equivalent of being caught fucking on the kitchen table. How'd it end? Not so well. I apologise, which he didn't seem keen on hearing. I didn't apologise again. Didn't in fact really feel like doing it at all by the end because I just have to say he was pissing me off. I loved his wife. She loved me and he was a pussy. That's just how it is. It's not officially my fault. Nevertheless, I have some sympathy for him under the circumstances, but the whining. Anyway, when I wasn't rising to the bait, he finally pushed me. He pushed me and took a step back at the same time. I haven't seen someone do that since primary school. And you? I successfully fought the basic urge to fuck him one in the face. Didn't say anything, turned and walked away. Was prepared to run because I know the shit would have hit the fan if I got into a fight. I don't mind leaving the police, as you know, but I'd rather do it with a redundancy payment than out in my arse. He didn't come after you. I expect to have thought about it, but no. Let's make it so far than shouts. You left your cheap bloody plonk, you bastard. And you know what? It was a shabbily. It was a fucking shabbily, cheeky bastard. And he kicked the bottle over and all, so there was hardly any left anyway. She's still laughing behind her coffee cup. Well, well done for walking away. You took the moral high ground. Apart from the fact she shagged his wife and drank wine in her grave. Nearly finished the muffin. As usual at such times, one begins to accept it won't be long before one has to return to work. Your teeth look great, by the way, I say. Thank you. Makes you look younger. Thanks. That's what I thought. Until Saturday night. Doesn't sound like she was looking at your teeth. Hilarious.